Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association.
Dan King is founding principal of Close Reach Consulting. Using his proprietary organizational prowess model, he helps senior management teams create strategic clarity and execute with speed and precision. He's the author of The Scorecard Solution, Measure What Matters and Drive Sustainable Growth. And that's published by AMACOM, a division of the American Management Association. Dan, welcome to Edgewise today.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be with you.
In the book, you introduce the concept of an organizational prowess scorecard. Do you mind spending a little bit of time describing that?
Sure. The scorecard essentially is a tool to measure the capabilities required to grow a business at an accelerated pace. The scorecard provides a numerical benchmark for what I call the three big drivers of growth, which are strategy planning, execution framework, and talent. Arguably, Dave, those three capabilities are the what, the how, and the who of organizational performance. And what I've learned in my research is that leaders love numbers. So really, the scorecard on a scale from 20 to 100 provides a very precise calibration as to where the weakness resides when it comes to those three macro capabilities. And then the scorecard is broken into actually quartiles. So a leader is able to look at their business from the standpoint of, are we lagging? Are we vulnerable? Are we resilient? And ultimately, are we agile?
What do you find is the biggest risk for a leader who doesn't apply this type of rigor or methodology?
Well, I think the big risk is missed opportunity, particularly within a 12-month business cycle. Businesses develop plans typically in a 12-month period of time or framework, and without a view of organizational capability, those plans can be flawed. In other words, when you apply this scorecard prior to a planning exercise, you're able to get very precise information around weakness in the business that needs to be addressed before ambitious goals can be developed. Organizational weakness that goes undetected will lead invariably to investments that are squandered on the wrong things. Therefore, strategic goals can be missed. So growth will be elusive, and leaders generally may not have good insight into some of the inner workings of the business. The scorecard solves for that. Without that clarity, what often occurs, I've found, Dave, in business is there's a programmatic effect towards making investments. Employees in many companies call this the flavor of the month approach to leadership. It happens specifically when a leader lacks the data that the scorecard provides. Consequently, lots of things are tried, and that can suck up precious resources and not a particularly effective way to address organizational deficiencies.
Would you categorize the scorecard as a macro view of what's going on? The detail, I guess, is always available underneath, but it's just sort of something you can get a quick understanding of what the goal or the status of a certain situation is.
Exactly. There is a macro view, but it also contains a fair bit of detail.
Okay.
So if you think about those three macro capabilities that I mentioned earlier, strategy planning, the execution framework, and talent, those will receive a numerical score individually. But then to arrive at that numerical score, you will have looked at multiple subcomponents.
Right.
So, for example, in the execution framework, there might be, 15 to 20 very specific items that need to be assessed, and each of those will have their own score. That also, at the end of the day, gives the leadership team a roadmap. They'll know exactly where those weak spots are that they need to shore up.
Yeah, only because I'm hearing the echoing voice of my ninth grade algebra teacher, Mrs. Patakula, saying, remember to show your work.
Right.
Another question here. What do you find is the biggest mistake that leadership teams make when it comes to strategic planning?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned your ninth grade experience, because usually what gets missed is the senior team has not done their homework. It's almost like going back to school.
Sure.
There's research, assignments, there's a data collection aspect of planning that is critical. When a senior team starts with the offsite session as the planning process, they've missed it because the outcome in terms of strategic choices will be very opinion driven, which is fine. You know, there is certainly room for opinions in planning, and executives that have been around for a while certainly have deep experience that you want to rely on as you plan the future. But past experience is not always a great predictor of future success, and things in business are not static. So if you're going to rely on last year's experiences to plan next year's strategies, you'll miss some things. Your people have changed, the marketplace has shifted, the competitors have pivoted. You've got to be aware. So data collection, which is specifically around market intelligence, competitive analysis, and then a very thorough internal assessment of your capabilities, all of that needs to come into play and get brought into the planning session.
Dan, so many businesses struggle with stringing together successive years of growth. You know, this year's up, next year's down, next year might be a little bit up. It's just consistency ends up being a real challenge here. Why is this so difficult to deliver those sustainable results year on year?
That's a great question. I think this is something many leaders struggle with, particularly leaders of what they would define as a growth business. There is clearly a tendency to cling to the status quo on the heels of a great year. You know, I actually had a CEO tell me after exceeding plan in a given year, he said, and this is pretty much a quote, just two more years of this type of performance and we're going to consider an IPO. And he unfortunately adopted across the fingers management posture, which you might call, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But in business, things never stay the same. And what I've learned, smart leaders will work on the business in the good times. In other words, don't wait for the crisis. This means really that when you are enjoying good results, that's the time to apply the scorecard and identify the areas for continuous improvement. Good times don't last without preventive maintenance. And a great year, you know, rarely repeats itself if you cling to status quo. Change is constant.
Since research has shown that less than 20% of companies actually achieve their strategic goals in any business cycle, what are they missing when it comes to execution? I mean, you got this great plan, you got these goals, but where are people coming up short on the execution side?
This is so prevalent. I mean, the research has shown that even companies that really invest deeply in building a strategic framework, very few truly can get to the end of a business cycle and say they've completely achieved everything they intended to. And when it comes to achieving ambitious goals, hope needs to be replaced with a framework of execution. And this is probably the most critical of the three big components of the scorecard. By definition, a framework is multiple dimensions. And I think this is why for many senior teams, execution is a bit elusive because you have to be so good at so many things. It starts with the great strategy, but then you have to have ownership. Who will own that strategy? And then secondly, what I refer to as the execution team. This is typically in most businesses, it's a small cross-functional group of people that are the experts. They're in the trenches. They have very specific skill sets. They drive that strategic execution on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And they're held accountable. And the work they do is incredibly visible. And one of the obligations that a senior team has within the execution framework is to hold that execution team accountable and to have frequent reviews. Most businesses, this is a 30-day review, looking very specifically at what's been done, the metrics, where help is needed, so that the senior team and the executives can step in and remove barriers to help that team get done what has to get done at a tactical level. So it's putting all that together. It's multidimensional, as I say, and it's paying very close attention to execution on a daily basis. And when the rigor is applied and the accountability is there, these are the companies that achieve that, what I call the hyper-growth realm. where they're overachieving their budget. They're not just hitting plan, they're going beyond. And that plays into that whole question around sustainability and delivering excellent results in multiple years.
You know, that's interesting. When I first started doing webcasts here and the issue of sustainability first came up, the neurons in my brain sort of saw sustainability as exactly what we're talking about right now. Sustainable results, sustainable capabilities, that kind of thing. And then it became this whole, obviously it was the environment and being green and thinking about business models, you know, that way. And it's almost interesting to me. I'm just marveling on the fact and taking note that we're finally sort of baking, you know, in my mind, what the original of sustainability was back into the whole pie, which is really, you know, being a consistent, high-performing organization.
Absolutely. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. And,
no, I agree with you. They're not.
You know, when you can create a sustainable culture and you deliver, a lot of good things happen internally. And, you know, that's an environment people certainly want to be a part of. Then you can enhance the culture with some of the community-related opportunities, the green opportunities. People in your organization want to rally around those kinds of things, and that creates something we haven't really discussed here, but it's called discretionary effort. And it's a cultural dynamic that's incredibly powerful. And very simply, it's when people in your business, you know, want to do more than what's expected.
Right.
They have a desire to exceed personally because they like what they're doing, they like the leadership, they like the cause. And when a leadership team can create that kind of engaged workforce, it's like, get out of the way because, you know, they can't be stopped.
You mentioned a little bit earlier this idea of overachievement or overachievers. Why do you think so very few organizations really carry that type of characteristic, that type of capability, the superpower of overachievement? You know, in many cases, actually surpassing financial targets. Why do you suppose there are so few of them?
This is something I've been curious about and talked to a number of CEOs about. I've done research on this, and I think the one big driver here that keeps companies at more of that mediocre realm in many cases is a planning culture that is one of caution. Strategic initiatives typically are developed based on the existing constraints of the business. Leadership teams are required really to look at what they can deliver organizationally, and they plan accordingly. And if there are constraints or capabilities that are a bit minimal, the planning, by definition, will be conservative. So the big, bold strategies don't really get attacked, and that's discouraged. And the other point there, I think, is that compensation often plays a part in this. So people who do the planning, they'd like to get a bonus. So they want a plan that can be achieved, and they'll lower the bar to achieve that bonus.
Sure.
And that can lead really to playing it safe when most competitive industries, playing it safe is not safe at all, because standing still or reaching for very conservative milestones, you can actually, in many competitive environments, regress because the competition will outflank you.
We've spent a fair amount of time talking about the scorecard and what it provides to leaders. And I'm a leader and I've got the scorecard tacked to my whiteboard in my office, or I've got it posted in the lunchroom or the common space of the company or something like that. But okay, so we have the scorecard and we're all looking at it. Okay, now what? What do we do to deal with that data? How do we act upon that data? Where do we go?
At the core of it, right? This is the whole point of execution and overachievement. The scorecard, you're right, on its own will be very interesting. It'll deliver good data. It will point out where the weakness is and what senior teams need to address. What I've found that the most effective way to act on what's learned from the scorecard is to build a playbook. Playbook is a term we hear a lot. It's used in business. In my way of thinking, this is a very tactical, very specific tool to execute on the things that need to be addressed. So in its simplest form, the playbook breaks down what might be a broadly defined weakness into very manageable segments and time frames. For example, I did some work with a division president of a global business who applied the scorecard and revealed weakness in her strategic planning process. And, you know, she was wise enough to know that she could not just simply say to her team, hey, you know, we've got to do a better job of planning and expect anything different to occur from making that statement. So what she did, and what I would advocate is an absolutely correct approach for leaders, she used the scorecard data to build the playbook around very specific items within the strategy planning process. In that case, there were three things. She learned that she needed to collect more robust competitive intelligence. She needed to include more experts from the business to help balance the strategic choice making. In other words, the company that only reserves the planning for the senior most people is probably missing an opportunity. And she realized that. So she included some people two or three levels below in the organization who were in the execution realm of the business, because they bring a dose of reality as you begin to make strategic choices. And then thirdly, she realized that she had not, in every case, appointed strategy owners. And that's a big, big piece when it comes to the accountability. So the playbook reflects the what, the who, and by when. And it really becomes the cornerstone to the execution discipline to address the things that you've learned within the scorecard. And once that playbook kind of discipline is embedded in the business, an organization will be really on a path towards overachievement.
We've been speaking to Dan King. Dan is the author of The Scorecard Solution, Measure What Matters and Drive Sustainable Growth. Dan, thanks so much for being with us today.
Dave, great. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.